It's really, to me so far, been the saga drama of the summer, because the way it's playing out and also the way it's unfolding, and there's going to be more developments this week. But I'd like to just start off with Mira Lorza had a press conference in front of Hope High School. It was a little odd because I thought that Dan McGowan of the Boston Globe kind of broke the story, that things are already in motion. He instead struck this odd tone that he's open to it and thinking of doing it, and he's open to it, even though by all accounts it's already in motion. He, to me, it's an odd situation where it's hard for him to say that, you know, we're going to do this, because he's in year five of being mayor. Granted, he had some battles with the teachers, but he almost seems to be trying to ride the rail, if you will, of reformer. But he's the mayor in the same way as in the John Hopkins report, he gave the schools a C. I'd like to just start off with your thoughts on how Mayor Lorza has been during this whole situation that continues to evolve, by the way, with the Providence schools.
Well, the striking tone I find in his presentation is more the repeated assertion that the city doesn't have the tools, the city doesn't have the authority to make the changes that have to be made. And I don't think that's really true. I mean, it's not the city has power. It's almost a very passive way of going about it, saying we don't have the tools, let the state come in and do their thing. And if you're, at least my read of the Paul Crowley Act, which is what everybody's referring to allow the state to come take over the schools, it calls for 3 years of just support, which would mean no additional changes that the school district can't make on its own. So I think that's the thing that's most worrisome to me, is that this idea that we don't have the authority. Well, you are the local executive, right? You're the mayor of the city. You should be out there doing whatever you can, pushing that envelope and calling for changes to allow you to fix the school district. So that's the passivity of it suggests to me that this, it's really just going to be, here, you guys take this hot potato up at the state house and we'll see if anything comes out of it. And that should be a concern to anybody who's invested in the Providence school system.
Do you think it's because of, he was having, obviously, some a tough time with the teachers union, as you and I have talked about. It was that early February 2018 when he had his state of the city, and it was shouted down and stopped really by, you know, the teachers union. And then they dogged him after that, and then he came to an agreement, and then he did win re-election. He didn't have a repeat of that this year. It was different because he then had baby Omar. But do you think it's with Mayor Lorza, is it lack of experience, but do you think it's just not, like, kind of not trying not to buck the system, which is why he's allowed it to fester and get worse while he's been mayor?
Yeah, well, I think he sees the takeover as an escape hatch, and I think the shouting down of his State of the City address was kind of rattled him. And so he's not sure, you know, it's tough to take on the school or the teachers union, and if you're going to do that, it's going to be about all you're going to be able to do, and it might destroy your political career. It's what a responsible city executive would do, but I think he sees this as a way out and a way to pass blame on and say, well, look, we don't have the tools. Whereas at the press conference, there were teachers coming out saying, oh, it's the condition of the classrooms. It's we have big class sizes. We need a new curriculum. So the teachers union is out coming up with their own explanations. And the mayor isn't contradicting that at all. He's essentially just saying, look, we don't have the tools to fix this. You guys take it. And I think that points to a weakness of leadership and a lack of will to actually address the problems, which the state by itself is not going to come in and fix. And to the extent it will allow changes to contracts or come in and change things like that, the local executive and school department, school committee are going to have to be involved as well in making those decisions. I mean, when Hope High School was taken over in 2005, was having oversight from the state, the biggest single change was that they forced all the teachers to reapply for their jobs, and that culled about 50% of all the school teachers in the district. That's not going to happen unless there are people forcefully pushing. And so what's clear is that the mayor has decided, I'm not going to be the guy to go up against the teacher union and push back on them. So this is my way to gracefully bow out of this thing.
Now, Justin, when you say the Crowley Act, and last week, I think it was, again, the Boston Globes had phenomenal coverage of this, and that may surprise some people, but what they need to understand is Dan McGowan, who was at WPRI Channel 12, his beat basically was, he was the Providence beat reporter, if you will, even though he was online. By him jumping to the Globe, it's really astounding, but his sources are incredible. He broke some news last week. He talked about, in his story about changes, of there were two school districts they talked about. One was what was done in Lawrence, Mass., and some of the changes that took place. Another one was, I believe, was in Camden, New Jersey. The thing about Lawrence is a big part of this that they start to zero in on is, I think in both scenarios, or at least in Camden, when Chris Christie was the governor, they fired 200 teachers. I think it was more of the same in Lawrence, but a big part of this, from what I understand, as the Globe brought out, is what you just touched on, school class size. From what I understand in Providence, most believe and agree it is too big. I think they have 26 kids in a classroom. Ideal situation. May not seem like a lot to some people, but should be closer to 21, 20. The lengthening of the school day, apparently, is big. You know, you get that much more learning involved. But another element that seemed to come out from both Camden and Lawrence, Mass., is that to give the principals more control over the curriculum, where they seemingly don't have control. It's as shocking as it seems, but they don't have control over the curriculum. Now, when you're reading the Crowley Act, and they're supposed to make some, you know, the new education commissioner, Afanti Green, is supposed to make a big announcement this week. Justin, do you believe it's just going to still be along the lines of kind of like Band-Aids to the problem?
Well, I think so. I mean, the largest reform, apart from, you know, state funding increasing to Hope High School at the time, whether they can do that for a whole district, we'll see. But the biggest reform was forcing the teachers to reapply for their jobs, and that kind of rattles people, brings in some fresh blood and excited, you know, new people who want to change things. But when reporters checked back in 2011, Hope had backslid to what it was before the reform. And that's the real issue here. It's everything is a Band-Aid unless the risk to the adults in the system, the teachers and the administrators, unless that risk is ongoing, unless they know we can't backslide, then it'll just, the old ways of doing things will just reassert themselves. And I think that's the real issue, and that's what we're not seeing from the mayor, is this sort of determination of, I'm going to be on this and keeping an eye on you and making sure this doesn't backslide, and that if we have to force all the teachers to reapply every year, that's what we'll do. That kind of incentive and accountability isn't anywhere being discussed. And you hear a lot about curriculums and class sizes and the conditions of the rooms, and, you know, those will help, but nothing's going to help, and those aren't sufficient. And even if I think you could see good reforms even without having those in place, if there are the incentives for the people involved, the teachers and administrators, to keep the pressure on, that's what's lacking. And that's why, I mean, in longer term strokes, people like conservative reformers like me look at school choice in large part because that keeps that pressure on constantly, because you have to perform or kids will leave your school and you'll lose funding and eventually have to close down to your competitors or learn to compete. That's what's missing in a school district. And I'm not seeing anybody, that's sort of the big thing everybody's actually avoiding. So, you know, it'd be great if one time, swoosh, we're done, we brought in a new superintendent, we got rid of a bunch of teachers, and we've got new people in there, and we've got a curriculum and smaller class sizes. If that were the solution, you know, the class size doesn't matter too much when, as we heard from the John Hopkins report, the kids aren't paying attention. I mean, there's a difference between 21 and 25 students really make a difference when kids are you going to be able to get your kids off their cell phones because you have four or five fewer of them in the classroom. Maybe it helps. I don't see it. I think it's the state law, for example, putting pressure on school districts not to suspend kids. That is a big problem. Nobody's talking about that, at least at the local level. Those are the kinds of things that have to change, and yet we're just not seeing talk about that. We're seeing talk about almost as if everybody's hoping they can fix it without actually disrupting anything, and that's on its face a failing strategy.
Do you get the sense that Mayor Lorza is almost looking, I mean, you know, he's looking down the line. No surprise, he's talked to people and certainly is considered someone who's going to run for governor in 2022. Justin, I get the impression that Elorza is looking to find a way that he can come out of this and, you know, should there be some improvements, point to that, like under his leadership, the Providence schools, you know, improve, turn around, whatever you want to say, and as a result of that, you know, vote for me for governor. Obviously, Governor Raimondo has that on her mind, but do you get the sense that he's looking for a way to kind of take ownership of any possibility of reform and improvement that then he can kind of put that in his war chest?
Well, I mean, that's cynical politics 101, right? I mean, find blame for everything that goes wrong and take credit for everything that goes right. So, but I think clearly the fact that he's the first one out there with a press conference talking about this, but even the state saying, look, we don't really know quite all the details yet. Wait till next week. I mean, that's he clearly wants to be out there in front saying, so he'll be able to claim, I supported bringing in the state, which, again, if your ambitions are governor or other political office, I don't know why you'd want to be the guy who said, yes, I brought in somebody else to fix our problems, rather than the guy who said, here's what I'm doing to fix the problems. But that seems to be his strategy. And in fairness, it seems to work in Rhode Island. I mean, David Cicilline was the mayor and left the city in shambles, and he got promoted to Congress. And so it's all about impressing the right constituencies, and in this case the teacher union is one of the right constituencies. So I think, of course, he's trying to take credit and deflect blame, and that's what he's going to do, and it doesn't say much for his leadership ability, but it might be a winning political strategy in Rhode Island.
I agree with you. I think, well, I'll tell you what I'm hearing behind the scenes. Folks, it's John DePietro. We speak with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. This portion of the program of Very Political is brought to you by West Fountain Auto Body. Remember, if you ever find yourself in an accident, and it can happen, pick up the phone and call West Fountain Auto Body, 272-3340. It's Kenny. It's Patricia. It's your vehicle, West Fountain Auto Body, 272-3340. I have heard, Justin, behind the scenes that the new education commissioner, to her credit, has basically said to Governor Raimondo, who she reports to, kind of along the lines of just kind of keep him out of my way, meaning Elorza. She's also said to the press, very candidly, I certainly hope he allows me to take the lead here. It's the ultimate, you know, lead to get out of the way. I believe, I can't speak for her, but she's viewed him as someone that had an opportunity when he was in office and kind of just push the can down the road, and now if he wants to try to jump in to help, fine, but, like, don't lead. I've heard, Raimondo, she's got her own things to deal with. I've heard it falls to Brett Smiley, her chief of staff who worked with Elorza. From what I understand, he is he's the conduit to deal with Elorza. Feels, you know, he knows Elorza, obviously. They struck that deal where Brett Smiley pulled out of the race, and then in exchange, as much as they denied it at the time, but in exchange for that, he was then kind of like vice mayor in a way. It wasn't even because the mayor of Lorza had a chief of staff, Tony Simon. But Smiley became that, and then he jumped on board with Governor Raimondo. But I just think it's going to be interesting because, from what I understand, he is a little bit, I'm not going to say problem, but he's a different dynamic where they believe there should be one voice speaking on this. And anyone that's been paying attention, Governor Raimondo has certainly given the new education commissioner the platform to be that one voice. The only one that seems to be kind of jumping in to say, hold on, let me, I have a few remarks here on the microphone. And granted, he is the mayor, but it is the Elorza situation. Speaking of that, Justin, I want to ask you, both of us follow, I think, and see some of the union activity online. What I want to hear your thoughts, but what I'm seeing, at least, from the union online, meaning the Providence Teachers Union representatives, they accept zero blame, no accountability at all. They're pushing this narrative that the principals and administrators should be held accountable, they're really pushing a narrative on the condition of the schools, that is really what has affected things. To me, in no way addressing a lot of the really important points in the John Hopkins report, as the Wall Street Journal talked about, and that is, you know, the 5% proficiency in eighth graders, which is absolutely one of the worst in the nation. But what are you seeing in your impression of how the Providence Public, you know, the teachers unions, what their spin is so far, at least in trying to put it out there to the public online?
Well, this is where the state and national level unions really come in handy, because they've already done the talking points work, and they've got, you know, it's probably, you know, deploy plan Q, you know, where they just, here's what we go out, here's how we make it seem like other things are the problem and not you guys, here's how we avoid reductions in your pay or in your time off. It's definitely a strategy, and you can kind of understand it as a negotiating strategy. The problem is, in Rhode Island, nobody ever negotiates it down. It just stays where it is. But that's right. That is it. One thing that struck me is you have teachers out there, and I'm sure at the teacher level they are sincerely pained by all of this. Nobody wants to feel like they're contributing to, you know, hurting a generation of children. But, you know, they're saying things like, there were, in my classroom, there were holes everywhere in the floors and the walls and that sort of thing. And I'm just kind of surprised I haven't seen more news footage of the supposed problems. That's been kind of interesting, that you wouldn't be seeing. I mean, that should be on all the TV stations, right? Just giant holes in the floor at all the school systems. So you wonder what the reality is, and nobody can actually go through all the schools as a private citizen and see. But it's definitely a talking point. Deflect it. Nobody's really stepping up to say, this is what we will change to turn this around. And to some extent, you can understand it, because it's not necessarily the unions. You know, it's one reason you can oppose public unions for this reason, but it's not necessarily the union's job to help the reform along. They've got their own constituents. But in the absence of strong leadership willing to place blame at the management level, that's going to affect and dilute any changes that we see. And that's really what it is. I mean, it's everybody saying it's not our fault, and then the people who should be assessing and assigning blame, the executives, whether you're talking to mayor or the education department at the state level, those are the people who should be saying, this is the problem, this is what's wrong. And they're all saying, oh, well, let's work together and not assess and apply blame. You really have to. But I think that's correct, that the union has its talking point strategy, its damage control process, and that's what they're working on right now.
It's absolutely true, and I hope people appreciate that. You know, it was explained to me, I was talking last week with someone, high-level Democrat-type person, that said, what people need to realize is, and they said, think of when you watch the Patriots, and it's second down and 10, and they go into the huddle. Well, you know, Tom Brady has a list of plays that he calls in the huddle when it's second and 10, and then let's say they pick up 3 yards. Now it's third and 7. Well, it's the same type of thing. They go into the huddle, and then Brady calls a certain play, and then they enact it. The way this person described it to me is that's really how they operate. They, every type of situation have, the union feed them, here's the play. Here are the talking points. If they're saying this, you come out with this. This is your play. People need to realize is it has very little to do with A, the truth, or B, what the situation is. It's all defensive. It's all spin. It's all throw the other, you know, I saw a lot last week on the condition of the schools and the principals and everything. But what's also interesting, Justin, I want to give you the final word on this, is I went back and looked at a lot of the tape and the articles regarding that. You know, it was early February 2018 when the teachers union basically shut down Mayor Lorzer's State of the City. And then they went after other places where he was then going to speak, and they'd rally and picket line and all this other stuff. You know, at no point at that time, when they were screaming they want a new contract, Justin Katz, at no point did they ever mention the condition of the schools. Zero. Never. It was all about what they deserve, and they want this, and the new contract. Someone I know familiar with it said when they were in contract negotiation, never. Conditions of the schools wasn't in the top 10 things that they were talking about. Suddenly now, it is the focal point, and they just keep recirculating these photos of mold on the ceilings and broken chairs in the Hope High School auditorium and leaky pipes. And suddenly now it's become, they try to paint it like, you know, boy, that's the real problem. If you fix up the schools, these kids would get a great education. What's your thought on that?
Well, it does make you wonder whether they have folders full of pictures taken over the past 10 years. You know, every time something breaks, they take a picture and put it in a file somewhere so they can break it out at moments like these. And that's the challenge for the public, is it's very difficult to,
right,
to know exactly what the choice, what the actual reality is. And it's very difficult to find anybody who will go to the process of explaining, okay, well, they put out these pictures. That one's from 2012. It was a problem for 2 days, and we fixed it. That one was last year. It's not an issue anymore. That one's still on the table. I mean, our public discourse just doesn't happen at that high level anymore. So it's really easy to deploy these things. Here are all the pictures. Here's what you're going to go out and say. And I'm sure there are some genuine problems, because every large organization in an old, venerable city like Providence is going to have issues with buildings, with this, with that, things will break. It's a very easy excuse to make. And so that seems to be a lot of what they're doing. And, you know, the governor already had that plan, right, to fix the schools. So that shouldn't be the focus of this reform. This reform should be about changing the process by which the schools are operated, and that includes the contract. I mean, kids in dirt huts in Africa go to school and learn. I mean, it's really the motivation of the people, and the community and the parents deserve some of the responsibility here too. It's their motivation and the ability of the district to figure out what the students need. The environment's important, but it's not the end-all, be-all. We used to go to school and, you know, uphill both ways, right? This is a cliche, but
right,
no air conditioning. It was a much different time without a lot of the kid. We didn't drug the kids on behavior modifications when they misbehaved. We managed and got great education. Those things aren't the end all be all, but they are a good way to say, to take attention away from the things that really are important and that will affect the adults' income and the comfort of their jobs if they're implemented, the reforms we actually need.
You know, it's funny you said about, you know, they you wonder if they just pull these photos out of a folder. I did see one of the pictures, I think it was like a ceiling tile, something else, and a member of the media was asked online because they were regurgitating the photo. Where is that from? And I think they said, and then the person on the media said, I think Central High School. But Justin, I went 3 years ago to a conference at Central. People don't realize Central High School is now brand new, state-of-the-art, air-conditioned, couldn't be nicer. One of the nicest schools probably in the entire state. There's no way that picture was from Central High School. But it does remind me, number one, the media people that are sharing these photos. But number two, there was a story that in the 70s, when at the Civic Center, they used to have a room full of broken chairs. And I mean like 100 to 200 broken chairs. And after a show, they would have the workers go in and cart them out and toss them around. And then they would say to the promoter, whoever booked the show at the Civic Center, you owe us for 200 broken chairs. And they'd go, count them yourself. And you would see they had 200 broken chairs that they would toss around. And they would do that all the time. It kind of reminds me of that. I want to ask you about the governor, though. Folks, this portion of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by Water Filter Company, WFC. Have a water filter installed in your home today, 401-294-2400. The headquarters are right off Route 4 in North Kingstown. It's Steve and Alice Water Filter Company. They can install it right in your sink. Clean drinking water, no lead, no arsenic, no chemicals, just clean drinking water. Water Filter Company, 401-294-2400. Justin, a new morning consult came out, and Governor Raimondo, but I still think this reeks that there's something wrong with this whole picture. She, despite winning re-election in November with, as she says, a mandate of 53%, which then enabled her to become co-chair of the National Democrat Governors Association, where then even Tom Friedman of the New York Times is saying, boy, she'd be great on the ticket for a VP slot. But boy, Morning Consult comes out And Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker is the most popular governor in the country with 73% approval rating. And is Governor Raimondo at 53? No. Is she at 50? No. Where is Governor Raimondo? Second least popular governor in the country at 38%. Justin Katz, how do we explain that when last November she apparently won with 53% of the vote?
Yeah, it's a bit of a conundrum. I mean, it's always been the story with Governor Raimondo that there were almost two versions of her. There was the version that everybody saw nationally, and there was the local version where, you know, nationally, what a great, you know, being profiled as one of the most influential people in the world and great reforms and this is the future of the party and et cetera. And then you looked around locally and you thought, well, where are the results of this? And
right.
You know, just about every poll had her unpopular. I mean, her result in the election was surprisingly good. I don't think anybody really expected her to get that high a level of support from the electorate. But the two things to consider in that are the November elections are, especially, they are nationalized. So a lot of the talking points have to do, and a lot of what's on people's minds is the president, you know, and or how Congress is doing. And so the national story where Raimondo is strong is more important during elections. And of course, the other thing is she's had so much money and so much ability to purchase ground game that surely had an effect in driving up her vote total. But that's not going to translate necessarily into popularity. What translates into popularity is people thinking you're doing a good job for their state. And there's just, you know, if you look at the last week, granted, I'm sure the governor wants to give the education commissioner space to take, you know, the lead on Providence schools, but it's important for the people to see that the governor is backing it in order for any reform to actually take hold. And where's she? She's doing, you know, a Sun Valley Conference in Idaho with the global elite. You know, she's not at that. She's not in Providence. She's not holding her own press conferences. So people locally don't really see her doing much, but nationally she looks like, you know, on paper she looks great. And I don't, so I think that's the difference we're seeing. And I think she's clearly positioning herself to move national and not expecting to have to find much support locally in the future.
I agree with you. And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. Our segment is very political. Justin, I also just find that what people need to understand is these things don't happen by accident. Someone, that to me, Tom Friedman of the New York Times, very influential columnist, been on the scene a long time. You see him on Meet the Press. He's been around for quite some time. But this is, to me, with the Raimondo political machine, this did not happen by accident. Someone got in a way to Tom Friedman and said, we'd like you to consider, and he wrote a column, you know, this Democrat that I really like, this type of Democrat called Gina Raimondo, moderate Dem. But what is just ironic to me is where it shows it's an out-of-towner, it's someone being worked by a public relations person, is just the fact that, as we know, the headlines of really Raimondo for the past 2 weeks were CNBC, worst state in the country to do business, Wall Street Journal, education horror show with the capital city and the Providence schools, and then number three, her approval rating going down again, 38% in the morning consult, second most popular governor. It just doesn't, the Friedman narrative, it may play nationally, but as you and I go, it doesn't play locally. And this is also the governor that, to me, is kind of checked out, and that's why she skipped the Bristol 4th of July parade, is she just doesn't want to hear it anymore. So, but you're exactly right, because I think it's what you and I have talked about. If you're not from here, and you just see her give a speech, and as I've said, she certainly has, you know, the proper pedigree, first female governor, former venture capitalist, went to Harvard, Yale Law, Rhodes Scholar, General Treasurer, then Governor, now co-chair of the Democrat Governor Association. She seemingly has all the qualifications, like, wow, this person's incredible. But then the thing is, we see the end result, which is someone where there's been a lot of glitches, a lot of mistakes, botched rollouts, whether it be UHIP or the roads and so forth. I think she's the classic, you know, it sounds, all sounds good in the conference room. But then when it comes to, it's like a football team, you know, it sounds good on the drawing board, sounds good in the huddle. But then when they go to execute it, it's either a fumble or an interception. I want to give you the final word just on Governor Raimondo, which to me, that's the type of stuff that, that is most important to them, because that Tom Friedman quote goes out into a fundraising letter to her base.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, consider also Tom Friedman, I'm sure he was quoted for that article, but he's a national writer. So he's going to be taking that national perspective. So for him, as he's writing, he's thinking, okay, moderate versus far left, crazy progressive Democrat, which is going to be the best for the party and for the left in the long run. And so the actual success of the governor is not necessarily something he's concerned about. And I think that, that ought to be the thing that people keep in mind, even at the national level, and because it does become political, it opens up the possibility that the Republican side can say, well, look, we can run things, we can get things going. This is a person who has all the global elite, you know, the headlines almost write themselves, right? The global elite support of Gina Raimondo versus, you know, somebody who can actually have some success in what they're doing. And it's a good political talking point, and it also happens to be real. And I think that's what people locally have long sensed is, okay, where are you, Governor? And I think one of the most used phrases between you and I on these conversations has been, you know, rolling up her sleeves. Where is she? Where is she saying, okay, I'm going to stop with the national junkets and fix this latest problem under my watch? And she's, I don't think she's ever done that. I mean, she got a good start with the pension reform years ago as treasurer. That's it. She's been pushing off that ever since. And so I think that's really the disconcerting thing, that it's not people, it's showing in the poll numbers, but it's not really reflected in how people are behaving toward her. And I think her reelection points to that. But she's clearly looking to move on to that national stage where your credentials really do matter much more, because there's the stake, the numbers are so much bigger on budgets and on population and issues that you're dealing with, and it's a lot easier to hide the fact that you're just about failing everything you're trying to do.
Folks, it's John DePietro. This portion of our program is brought to you by K's. Whether it's lunch, dinner, or drinks in the lounge, stop by K's. They're waiting for you. Justin, I want to just jump in. Folks, again, we'll speak with Justin Katz, managing editor at OceanStateCurrent.com. Congressman David Cicilline voted to impeach last week. He did split. There was a split, I should say, between him and Congressman Jim Landrman. I think Cicilline is one of those people that just absolutely feels completely invulnerable, feels he has that seat as long as he wants it, even breaking away from Nancy Pelosi with this. I think this is just more and more where I'm trying to figure out the last even initiative that he did that even remotely had anything to do with Rhode Island. He is a nonstop presence on social media, to me even trolling President Trump. His entire purpose in Washington these days seems to be that he goes on the cable news channels, he uses the Democrat talking points. To me, he's almost become just a full-time Democrat agitator whose main goal is just to be a mouthpiece to bash President Trump and this administration.
Yeah, well, you see nationally the Democrat Party, I'm sure the Republicans do it, although it's not as common, at least we don't have as much firsthand experience here in Rhode Island with it. They'll look for the safe seats, and that's the person who can go out and be the attack dog. And for years, it was Sheldon Whitehouse, and he's been a lot more quiet recently, so they must not feel as if his seat is as safe as it once was. But it does suggest somebody's making the calculation that David Cicilline can't lose. And as we said earlier today, he left Providence in ruins and was promoted to Congress and never had to really face any consequences for that. So there's good reason to think he has his finger on the pulse of his constituency. But what will be interesting, though, is this vote split him and Jim Landrieu. So if Rhode Island does lose a congressional seat, which a lot of people are expecting because our population is not growing, that'll pit the two of them against each other. And the question will be, which of those two is the stronger candidate and better understands Rhode Island politics? And you have to conclude that they're thinking it's going to be David Cicilline if that comes to a head-to-head battle. And so he is just safe, because the people who are going to vote and the machine locally can put him over the finish line no matter what he says. So that's got to be on their mind, and I'm sure he's enjoying the limelight of it all.
I think you're right. And also, I think about a year and a half ago, or at least a year ago, it was discussed. I believe Langevin kind of did a trial balloon and floated out he would run for governor in 2022. And since David Cicilline, to his credit, Langevin has been in Congress, I believe, since 2000. He took over the seat, which was Bob Wiegand, because then Wiegand, ran for Senate. And so that opened it up for Jim Langevin, who was Secretary of State. But Langevin's been there for 20 years. Cicilline has been there since he was elected in 2010. And to his credit, he has certainly moved up the ladder faster. You're even hearing Cicilline. I saw him being interviewed, and he was even asked, do you think you'd like to be Speaker someday? I mean, that is just a position that Langevin was never in and is not going to be in. And I get the sense that that Jim Langevin maybe sees an opportunity that he was pretty open. But I think this could be, after next November, his last time in the House. That would give him 20 years, and then I think he'd make a run for governor, and he could run for governor in 2022 as sitting congressman, which I think would help him. Finally, I think, Justin, that the people in the city of Warwick, I wouldn't blame them for being upset and confused. This is it's really shameful what's going on. I think it's, I hate to say it, but I think it's more incompetence as opposed to, it's certainly not intentional, but this shell game of, we don't have the money, there's no sports. We do have the money, there's sports. We're working on a compromise. There's no money. We need to save $6 million. This is, again, they're just toying with the emotions of the children, of their families. Warwick, that so long seemed to be a city under Scamayor's out of adhesion, one of no labor strife, and seemingly, I guess even compliment them, that it seemed like things ran pretty smoothly in the city of war. Boy, no longer. I mean, they always just seem one week away from another crisis, and it's really a pinball, the way the finances are going, which, again, if I was a resident of the city of Warwick, I would demand to know, what exactly is going on, and how is, $4 million appearing and disappearing almost overnight? I just don't see leadership in the third largest city.
No, and that's what's concerning. And I think probably I do agree, it's not, the politics aren't as central, I don't think, in Warwick as, say, in Providence. I think people have a little bit more focus in office. People in office have a little bit more focus on actually doing a job correctly. So, you can, in a budget like, in a city like Warwick, you can find $4 million on a one-year basis. The problem is you'll have to find it again next year, and then the year after, and on and on and on, and it'll have to keep growing. And so I think the demon they're wrestling right now is, do we work on fixing the problems, or do we find a patch for this year and hope something comes up that fixes it, that gets us over the threshold next year too? And it's a tough game, because first of all, most of the public, once it's resolved, once they say, okay, we found the money, there will be sports this year, most of the public will say, okay, good, I can go back to my job, my family, and my television. So the pressure will ease right after that. But they're also, they call it the Washington Monument. Sports are like the Washington Monument strategy, which is, they always, in Congress, they always said, oh, we're going to defund the Washington Monument. We don't have the money, in order to get money to do something else that's more important, not as visible, but more important to the politicians involved. That's a lot of what happens with sports. Is we can't find anything in our budget, so we're going to have to take away one of the most visible things that you're going to really get angry about. That's what they do, and it's tough to get down to where the actual overspending is and the actual problems are. And that's what they're grappling now, is that political problem. And I'm afraid for a while in Warwick, it was, teachers working to rule and that kind of thing. That was the level they were fighting on. Now, if they're going to be fighting on the elimination of sports and other programs every year or every couple of years when I have to come up with this budget again, that's going to be very unhealthy. And especially if there isn't a continued pressure from the residents and the voters and the families to say, let's fix this problem now. And again, just like Providence, there's very little indication that people are actually interested in doing that. And that's going to be, for years to come, I think, a challenge.
Before we let you go, folks, and again, it's Justin Katz. Justin, I'm just curious, going back to Providence just for a moment, any thoughts on what do you think is going to happen this week? And you know what else I found very odd was this whole dynamic that that Fran Gallo, that suddenly she appeared on the scene. You know, you and I had talked about the fact that she was involved with Central Falls. She's been out of the game for a little bit. Years ago, she had been in Providence. They named her as the acting superintendent. I did not get the impression that this new education commissioner, Fonte Green, that she wanted her in any way. It seems like another person, you know, another person in the kitchen, so to speak. I also noticed on Friday a number of these reps and council people, you know, like that Senator Gail Golden of Providence, she was on social media. I was not briefed on what the mayor was going to announce, and I'm not being updated on what's happening with the schools, and I need to be kept informed and blah, blah, blah. I just think there's so much politics, there's so much dysfunction in the city, but I want to just get your thoughts on I don't want to say predictions, but just what do you think is going to, you know, kind of roll out this week? Do you think it is going to be real reform, wholesale change, or is it going to be more baby steps? Let's almost like try to give the impression that we're making changes, but let's kind of just keep the status quo.
Yeah, I think we're going to see baby steps toward trying to keep the status quo. I mean, you see the phrase buy-in a lot. You know, problem with the last reform at Hope High School was there wasn't enough buy-in from the teacher in the community. Well, yeah, the buy-in is what killed it, because you started to get buy-in when it was killing reforms. I think that's what we're going to see. Fran Gallo was kind of an interesting twist to that, because she's associated with actual strong reforms and being willing to fight back against the unions. And that's to put her in that position at the moment, it was an interesting indicator in the other direction, that maybe they are actually going to do something tough and different. But then again, it could also be that, I mean, this is a huge hot potato. Who wants to be in that role right now? And so she may have taken it just as the tough as nails old broad who was willing to, you know, fight and just, I'll do what I need to do for this year while I'm in here. So it may have just fallen to her by, you know, everybody in the state who's qualified drawing straws, and she was the one who was willing and able to do it. So that I think we'll get the minimal reforms. Maybe we'll get something like in 2005 where in Hope High School where they said every teacher has to reapply for his or her job. I think that's about the limit of it. I mean, if Paul Karliak says you have 3 years of quote support from the state, where the state's more or less just advising before the state actually steps in to take things over. So I think they're probably expecting they've got about 3 years to see if some miracle fixes the schools without disrupting things. And I wouldn't get my hopes up that they're going to do a whole lot.
Folks, he's the managing editor at OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, great job, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks, John. Good to talk to you.
You are listening to The John DePietro Show on 99.9 FM and 1380 AM. News Talk WNRI.
AM 1380, 99.9 FM, always online at WNRI.com. It's John DePietro. Folks, thanks for tuning in to the John DePietro Show. Weekdays, we start at 11, we go until 2, and again on AM 1380. This portion of the John DePietro Show, well, it's brought to you by Mega Solutions and Staffing. You know, they do so much. MEGA, Mega. If you need work, if you need drivers and workers, certified help, part-time or maybe full-time weekend work, drivers, class A, B, non-CDL, Mega truck and trailer repair. You know, they do it all. We call it like the octopus. They have so many, they're involved with so many different things. Commercial trailer diesel equipment, free estimates, trailer pickup and delivery, all ABS repairs, brakes, doors. If it's on a trailer, Mega can fix it. No question about it. Mega Logistics, they do it all. 40 years experience, transportation of all kinds, logistics, routing, staffing, personnel, consulting, national global reach, family business, truck repair, healthcare management, which is huge. Folks, they do it all, and they're ready to do it for you. Just call Mega, MEGA, local family owned and operated company,
serving Rhode Island and Massachusetts for almost two decades. 866-420-MEGA, 866-420-6342 for Mega Disposal. Now remember, you can always email me. It's john@depetro.com. john@depetro.com. You know, just a couple of thoughts that I want you to remember. And folks, I always encourage you, go to the website, depetro.com. You'll see the latest there. Support the show. Support our sponsors. If you're listening right now, by the way, and you're a small business owner, and you say, you know, I like the theme. I like that Juan goes after these different, he holds the politicians accountable. He's not afraid to call them on the carpet. I agree with him. I support his views. I agree with him more than I disagree. Support the show. Contact me. I'd love to have you. Your ad here, kind of, as we say. You can email me, john@depetro.com, john@depetro.com. Now, you can hear we have a large number of sponsors, and they're loyal, and they stay. And we couldn't do the show without them, but you could be one of them. So we'll work it out. We will work it out, but we need your support. And if you're a listener, you have to support the sponsors and the advertisers to make it work. But what I want to mention, just a couple of random thoughts. Folks, how about the fact, you know, as much as Mayor Elorza is coming under attack right now, right, Jorge Elorza, the mayor of Providence, and rightfully so, right? You know what's so sad? In 2014, what was it that got him elected, right? Did he have a vision for the city? No. Did he have experience running the city? Absolutely not. Was he charismatic? Was he good with people? Did he have a successful track record in politics? No, no, no. Was he good with the business community? No. The main point, this is so sad, but you know I'm right, wherever you're listening. The main reason, folks, listen to me. The main reason he got elected and beat Cianci, why? Because he was, quote, honest. Oh, my God. Until we can get past that, we are never going anywhere. Until people stop getting elected just because they're not a thief or a crook, or, well, I'm going to vote for him because I think he's honest. I mean, my God, can you imagine, you know, you're shopping for whatever, a car, and you say, I'm going to buy it because it's got four wheels on it. I mean, honest, that's like the barometer. But what's sad is that won him the election. It did. That's how he beat Cianci. But what I was going to say was, and then last year, he ran for mayor. He really didn't even have any opposition, not any real competition or anyone really going after him, a real challenge. But about the mayor of Providence, you know, there wasn't one word about the school system during that. There certainly was nothing about it in 2014. And there was nothing about it in November. And, you know, and even part of it, I blame Raimondo, right, Quina. She did hide and wouldn't release the education scores back October 1st when she should have. And I will give her credit for this. If they had not, if Raimondo and company did not get the business community to put up 50 grand to do this John Hopkins report, things would be business as usual in the Providence schools. That's how bad it is. You want to talk about like accepting just disaster, right? And think of like where we are and where we live. Ask a Patriot fan, is it acceptable for the team to finish in last place and the stadium half full? And, you know, bet no. What's the expectation? Sold out Gillette, Super Bowl, right? Of course it is. But what's the expectation level in Providence? And what's the expectation level if the main requirement is, well, he's honest, or he's more, he wasn't in a federal prison, I'm going to vote for him, right? As they all went after the felon. They all went after Cianci. But in last November, you didn't hear anything about the schools. And the only thing you heard about the schools was the teachers were chasing Elorza around because they wanted more money in their contract. I mean, that's how broken the whole thing is. But what I want you to understand, now, I don't think I've announced it yet. I don't even know if I told Jeff yet. I will be going back to Washington in September. So, number one, I will be visiting the White House again, lockdown confirmed, and we'll be broadcasting from Washington. And this is going to be an incredible broadcast. So I'll get more dates and tell you more about it as we get closer. Maybe you're listening right now. You say, wait, Juan, that sounds great. I want to be a sponsor. Hey, come sponsor, right? JD in DC. Sounds good to me. But the whole feeling, I want you to understand, because people, I listen, obviously, those of you that follow the program know, I obviously, I'm not going to break any news here, I obviously have communication with Team Trump, because otherwise you don't have the President of the United States retweet you on Twitter, right? You don't have those who are following. I was at the kickoff announcement in Orlando. Who was it locally that emceed the Trump rally? Yours truly. Who is it was at the White House last September with the president of the Roosevelt Room? I was. What I want you to understand is they don't get it. For instance, they say when I do talk to, I'll just say White House people, Trump people, they don't get it. They say, why, like, who are these people that would vote for Gina Raimondo? They say, we've seen her. We've listened to her. We've seen her record. Right? CNBC, worst last place for business, worst public schools in the country. Absolutely the worst. And even when you have people that want to expand and build on the 195 lane, they don't even like call them back. But so you should understand their attitude is like, we don't get it. Why? Who would vote for these people? Someone, I won't say who, someone within the Trump camp was even saying to me, I will never understand how, like, what is broken that of all the different people, you have 1 million people that live between Wesley and Woonsocket. Providence, it's better than Worcester. It is. It's got so much potential. It does. But their attitude is, so you mean to tell me the best person, the person who the people really want, there's no one better than Mayor Alorza. Like, and I agree with them. And they're like, I find that impossible to believe. I said, listen, I find it impossible to believe. And it is ridiculous. You know, it would be as if, hey, that's just the way it is. Each year, the Patriots are in last place and they finish in last in the American League least or East. But no, what's the expectation level? Super Bowl rings, sold out, championship teams, get it done. Do your job, right? I agree. But see, I come back to and I try to explain that there's a huge disconnect between the people who work and make the state function and pay their taxes and run businesses. You have that crowd, which is small, unfortunately. And then you have the people that are just along for the free ride. They're on welfare. They want everything for free. The EBT cards. And you have Raimondo, and you have Alorza, and you have Cicilline, and you have that Sheldon Whitehouse, who I can't stand, and you have that Nelly Gorbea, and their whole attitude is everything's free. Don't worry about a thing. We'll handle it. Everything is free. We're going to keep the party rolling. All you should worry about is, you know, what pair of pajamas you're going to wear to Twin River today. Or something like that. My point is, it doesn't have to be that way. I think the biggest thing missing is, and I think you agree with me, is just that I don't feel I have representation. I don't feel I have representation. Raimondo does not represent my interest. She doesn't. And the State House is an embarrassment. Call it what it is. It is. I don't want to be negative. What are we supposed to do? Pretend that it's all fine? These people, they're not business people. They're the worst. You could get people from foreign lands that don't speak English that are better business people than these people. It's insanity. It is a cast of clowns. It has to change. It has to change. But as long as you're there and I'm here, we're going to talk about it and we're going to try to hold them accountable. This portion of the John DePietro Show, hey, speaking of sponsors and we're grateful, how about Greco Hyundai, for crying out loud? Go to Greco before you make a $10,000 mistake. During the summer switch, take the $10,000 test drive, the all-new Greco Hyundai location. Experience the brand-new facility. Test drive any new Hyundai and enter to win $10,000. Like a new 2019 Hyundai Elantra SE. Lease for just $65 a month. Or lease a new 2019 Hyundai Santa Fe, $179 a month. Take a test drive to win $10,000 only during the summer switch at the all-new Greco Hyundai, right off Route 6 in Johnson, right off 295 online, grecohyundai.com. Remember, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited, Harry. Entry period ends September 3rd. Must be 18 years of age or older to enter to win. Full official rules. See GrecoCards.com/SummerSwitch plus tax, title, registration, 220 doc fee with approved credit, 36-month zero security, $2,900 due. All factory incentives deal expires at month end. Visit my friends at Greco. And folks, what better deal? Test drive a vehicle. Boom, you registered for 10 grand. 10 G's sounds good. 10 G's sounds good to me's. It's John DePietro on AM 1380 and 99.9 FM, The John DePietro Show. And remember, always online at WNRI.com. Folks, it's The John DePietro Show. Weekdays, remember, we start at 11 and we go until 2. You can always listen online at WNRI.com. Now, I read all your email. So remember, email is john@depietro.com, no I's. And then follow me on Facebook and Twitter at John DePietro Show. Make sure you leave a comment that you enjoy Facebook Live. Also, remember, for whatever reason, you want to listen online, TuneIn Radio app, Simple Radio app, they're free. Just search WNRI, and the same thing with Alexa. And as always, make sure you visit the website. It's DePietro.com. It's the official website of The John DePietro Show.